I'd like now to welcome back to the show Issa Nyafaga. He is a political cartoonist, or was a political cartoonist in Cameroon. He's an artist in multimedia now. He's teaching at Santa Fe Community College. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. I'm happy to be here again.
And it's great to have you back. And
it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. And, I mean, you talk about such incredibly important and heavy things that are happening in your country, Cameroon. And I wanted people to get a little bit of an update, because the last time you were here, you were telling us the story of a man in Cameroon who was basically, he texted another man and was about to be put in jail for same-sex relationship, for homosexual relationship because of a text. And there were some lawyers defending him. They were getting death threats. And that's the last I heard. What happened since then?
What happened is that the lawyer replaced his family in the U.S., so four kids and one wife. And
because he was getting death. Where was he from?
He's from Cameroon. He's a lawyer who does pro bono work. Pro bono means, like, people who don't have lawyer in the courts, you can defend them. So that's what he does.
So he basically, for safety's sake, brought his wife and children to the United States.
Yes, but he's returning back because there is a lot of lack of human rights defending people who have their rights violated. So he wants to go back and do the work because that's what he wants to do. So
and
I was
so
in New York.
He's back. And what is the status of the defendant?
But it's out of a defendant that he got sentenced and then he's hiding, so he's wanted by the government. And so Michelle is also here because he wants to get his life safe and do his job properly, you know, without pressure, because he's a human rights defender, so he cannot be vulnerable. So he asked me again for help, so I was in New York during the holidays just to help him get in the network in the New York and, you know, in the New York human rights community, because also it's a very powerful place. And my government is really care about who is watching them and who's not.
Right.
So that's why we're very important to advocate for him.
Well, you were also, you got some European attorneys, I forget where they were from. You got them involved in this case.
Yes, yes. There is a woman named, she lives actually in Switzerland, and her name is Saskia. And then she's the founder of Lawyer Without Borders. And she go and intervene in Cameroon with Michel Togue and Alice Combe. So she also had death threats. So, but she lived in Switzerland, not in Cameroon, yeah.
What was the sentence of the man who was arrested and convicted for texting another man?
So his sentence is 3.5 years in prison.
Oh my
And 1 million franc CFA. It means it's like a $2,000 fees for sending a text to another man.
And so he has gone into hiding and...
Yeah, so now we're trying to get him out of the country because the government and the law of Cameroon, and even people in Cameroon who don't know what going to bed with person from the same sex is. So we can't just keep these people in prison because they will also die because they're in danger in the society or in prison.
So you, Issa, meanwhile, are staying busy, not just working on these things, but you are starting a radio station in Cameroon that will serve a very large number of people.
Yes, over 1 million people.
Over 1 million people in the area that you come from.
Yes, even out of the area I came from. Because, you know, in Africa, when you have a hearings and you want to give that present to one person, you can't do it in public. You have to have many hearings, so it becomes like a community gift.
Right.
So I can't just go and say I'm developing project in my own village or my own tribe. They will be in danger. That's why I want the network to understand and want listeners to understand.
Right.
So then the radio will serve in 8 different languages in the area. And then also the radio focus is that we treat taboos, because people think that HIV and AIDS is a curse.
Right.
And then homosexuality is black magic or witchcraft. And also women don't have equal rights. And there is some... female mutilation they call breath ironing in Cameroon. So it's prison now. You can Google it online or you can YouTube and see what they do to the girls, not to get the chest developed so men can rape them. So all these can be treated by radio. I think communication is like a therapy. It's a key. in the society to understand. So education is a key for human being development.
And so the radio is going to be called Radio Taboo.
Radio Taboo, yeah. You're going to treat anything that people cannot explain and just get their own explanation, even can also violate the right of other people, which my government does today.
Now, this is something that probably the government is not crazy about, this kind of radio station.
They are, but I also have to tell with donors, because we are running Kickstarter campaign now, we have to tell with donor that part of this money might go to administration fees. It means that sometimes we were trying to approach the government in a certain way, maybe bribe some officials so we can get the radio up. But as long as we are not talking about politics, we are not threatening their interests, the radio will run off, because it's not political radio to criticize the government. This radio to give the voice for people who don't have voice, underserved populations.
Very interesting. So who will it serve? I mean, you're talking about a huge area. It's a huge geographic area.
Yes, it's a very, very big geographic area where there are no cell phones, there are no any radio in there, and then people are very isolated. There are over 1 million people.
Right.
And then there are tribes. So I don't know how to measure that in the U.S. measure, but I can say that it's over 200 kilometers square in the rainforest. So these are people who live without running water, no electricity, no cell phones, no communication infrastructure. So the radio will help us to fight isolation.
And so you will be broadcasting, or the people involved with the radio station will be broadcasting in 8 different languages?
In different languages, 8 tribal languages, including French, English, and we talk about Pidgin English here. It's some sort of English, low-quality English with local languages. Yeah.
Now, you've got an incredible group of people who are involved in this. I was looking at your Kickstarter, and there's a guy who you call George of the Jungle.
Yes.
For example. Tell us about this guy.
So, George of the Jungle is one of the partners we have in the country. He's a Cameroonian surgeon who every weekend he works Monday to Friday. Friday at noon, he leaves his office, he leaves the hospital, and then go rent a car and get his med student from the state or from the country and go to the bush to give a surgery to people who live where there are no doctors. Then he come back Sunday evening and start work on Monday. That's what he does. So he's been coming to my village with all the network. We got a partnership with Drexel University students who are med students, and then they're also coming, bringing drugs from their family. They're getting support from their family. So that's what George does. So we call him George of the Jungle because he knows all the 10 regions in Cameroon where there are no doctors.
Wow. It's I think, very important to talk about this, because sometimes in Santa Fe we get into this idea that everybody has their folk healing traditions, and wouldn't it be great if we could just avoid surgeries with all these folk healing traditions and herbalism, and all that stuff is great, but sometimes you just need surgery.
You do need surgery, because I can tell the people in Santa Fe that some people on this planet never see a doctor in their whole life.
Right.
Just to examine it and say, what do you have here? What kind of pain do you have here? So if you get on our website and you see what George does, he does miracle with nothing, because he takes generator in those area and then boil also his equipment, you know, so it's very, very challenging performance that he does. And guess what, Mary Charlotte? The government never called him to ask him, that's very interesting thing that you do. Tell us about it. He's been doing this work for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm not advocating only for lawyers, I'm also advocating for doctors, so community leaders in Africa, you know what I'm saying? Because the elite are running the countries, not for their own interest, but for the interest of the country that colonized their nation. So, to understand the challenge is that the African nation are baby nation, because we're talking about America being one of the youngest countries, but it's only 200 years old, right?
Well,
African people have
an adolescent nation, perhaps.
Yes, but African people had independence like 50 years ago, so they're baby nation. So, based on this weak culture of countries, depending who colonized a country in Africa, they use that weak foundation just to influence the policy based on their own interests, like what their interest in natural resources or such a thing. But there is a very sleeping various community leaders in Africa that you can reach out, and these are the people I'm working with.
Now, you've got all sorts of other amazing people. You've got journalists and lawyers and artists and radio people from Africa and from the United States and from everywhere.
Yes, but we need everyone because we cannot make that change without just with certain people. We need everyone, you know. And also to understand another thing in Africa is that this is my work with the foundation. I tell them that, you know, you can't just wake up one morning and say, I want to support only education. I don't want to support health. And then I can take an example. You can give a solar panel to the medical center and say, what I care about is health. I don't want to care about education. So you give that to a medical center in the village like mine where there's no light. Keep in mind that in the evening is the only place where there will be a powerful light. So children will bring their books to read. We're already in education, even that you didn't want that.
Right.
So everything is connected in a very small community. George Boyle gave those surgery to the farmers because he wanted the farmers not to send the children to farm, but he wanted them to send them to school. So he started by providing health care to the parent and tell them, if you have been to school and I can perform a surgery, it means school is a good thing. So don't send your kids to farms. Send them to school. So then this farmer will work very hard and then they'll improve their crops and then produce more and send the children to school. So we starting with medical project, we cross education and agriculture. So for people just to understand. So this is the work that I'm trying to explain to foundation and people who can, you know, provide certain help in any part of Africa, that this is what is happening on the ground. And then Peace Corps volunteer from the state, you know, because much more people now today becoming global citizens, you know, so there are various number of U.S. citizens or people from all over in Africa who know the culture. So the thing are not like 30 years ago. You know, the world is changing.
We're talking to Issa Nyafaga about Radio Taboo and Cameroon, and I think it's amazing that you, after having been imprisoned and tortured in Cameroon, gotten political asylum, just keep going back. Are you in danger, or is that kind of over now?
It's not really over, but it's because I don't criticize. I call that in French. We call that mettre un peu d'eau dans son vin. Yeah, I put a little bit of water in my wine, so I don't criticize the government directly. What I do now, I do different project with my friend and my global network to show that government program have failed. That's the one thing. And the second thing, I live in a powerful country. You know, don't be so bad by criticizing America. This country is still very powerful. So imagine me coming to Cameroon with a little U.S. flag on my chest or on my cap. Who going to shoot that? Nobody. Right. Even government officials want to be my friend because one day I can ask to one of my friends just to invite them to come and see how it is here because America is fantasy for a lot of people. So they don't know what's going on here. But me and my friend knows, so we can go and measure. I measure my risk, you know. But also, I come there with a lot of people, so I have a lot of witness, so nothing can happen to me today. But I measure my risk because there are no risk zero, so anything can happen anytime. Yeah, but I want also to see my mother because, you know, they kicked me out of that country 17 years ago. So I still very, I think it's not fair. So now I live here, I have a capacity and enough means to go back.
And is your family involved? Are your brothers and sisters involved in the radio project?
Oh, yes, all of them, because my family support a lot of my projects. You know, it's been a fight when I was growing up because, you know, I'm making the radio for my niece because in my own family there is a taboo. You know that I grew up with four different mothers. My mother was the first wife, and then she married three other women for my dad. And I woke up every morning as a child being prepared by different women to go to school. So, and 5 years ago, my niece, one of my niece has a HIV and AIDS, and then my half-brother, her dad, asked her to leave the house because she has a curse. So now she left the village. So that's why I'm doing the radio, because this issue are in my own family, you know, and I also have other member of my family, and my brother died from HIV and AIDS, my half-brother, and then my sister now also get poisoned by her boyfriend, you know. So I'm struggling with that. So I'm doing the radio just for people to understand what is HIV and AIDS. The world is changing. You should understand that two men or two women going to bed is not witchcraft. People just discovering their body, and then they have more right and express what they emotion is, you know. It's so simple. It's love. But they don't understand that.
Right.
They just want to understand other things. Because they don't also have this education. You know, they don't understand that, you know, I can go to bed with somebody who is from the same sex. So what? I'm doing that in my privacy. It's my body. So I have a freedom to love who I want.
We're talking to Issa Nyafaga. It's just about time to go, but tell us about the community college course that you're teaching here in Santa Fe.
The community college is art and social justice and creative expression. But I think we already have the first session, and I love my student. We're getting so much fun. And also, we're turning into a leadership class because we're using found object, and these people have a capacity to empower their own community because they came from different background, and then they're very interesting in these skills of seeing life in certain way, not as the society present it to us. And Mary Charlotte, one of the reasons why I also like the process of teaching is because artists are like a half god. They are people who refuse the normal rules that the society imposed to us, then create their own world where they can tell their own story, where they can set up the scene and decided that the nice people will be maybe brown, or the nice people will be, blue, or something like that. So that's how artist mindset is. So that's what I really like in this process.
If people want to go to Issa's Kickstarter campaign, what you have to do is just Google Radio Taboo Kickstarter, and you will find it very easily. It's
right.
The first thing that'll come up in your search engine. And will you be?
I have a Facebook page too.
And you have a Facebook page too, so people can search for that. I'll link to it on my website as well. But certainly a very worthy project. And will you be doing any performances when the weather gets warmer?
When it gets warmer, I'll be doing a performance before I leave. And also on the 16th of February, I'm giving a talk about donating for Radio Taboo at Travel Park.
Oh, okay.
From 5:30 to 6:30.
So we will announce that when the time comes as well.
Thank you so much.
Issa Nyafaga, artist, activist, mover, shaker,
thank
force
you,
of
Mary
nature. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, it was a pleasure. Thank you. Ciao.
And I'm very happy now to welcome Diane Karp. She's Executive Director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Welcome.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Good morning, Santa Fe.
So it occurred
to
me, and beyond, it occurred to me that now that you do Speaking of the Arts, we actually haven't had you on for ages to talk about the Santa Fe Art Institute and all the things that are going there. And there's some really interesting and important new work and ongoing work that's happening at the Santa Fe Art Institute. So I wanted to just give you a little bit of time.
Well, thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here. As you know, we've been madly building the Art Institute over the last 12 years, and our programs range to residencies for artists and writers and performers from all over the world who come and live and work at the Art Institute anywhere from 1 to 3 months all year long. We have public lectures bringing in artists who have really creative and innovative ideas about issues of social justice, cultural freedom, environmental responsibility. We run workshops. We have an amazing education and outreach program.
Which I want to hear about because there's some very interesting things going on at the middle school level, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, indeed. So let me get really simple and direct. For the next 2 years, all of our programs, the public programs, are gathered around the theme of contested space. And it occurred to us that now that the entire world and outer space are being Googled and mapped, those areas that used to be the kind of wild frontiers where people could go and try things out no longer exist. And the contested spaces that we live with in contemporary society are cultural, social, political, land-based, and idea-based. And a good example of that is the exhibition that results from a residency project that's up at the Art Institute now and will be up till the end of February. And it's an exhibition called Shifting Baselines. It's about water in the 21st century in the Southwest. And it involves two artists and a curator who lived for the entire month of December together at the Art Institute to build this. Cynthia Hooper is an LA artist who addressed the issue of the Colorado Delta in the area where the U.S. and Mexico come together.
Such as it is or was.
Such as it is or was. But what she addresses is three either accidental or inadvertent wetlands that are created down there that have a very complex history but have created these environments for wild birds and migrating birds and all kinds of plant life and even fish, which is kind of an astounding reality. You wonder how the fish got there, but they are there. And what she is basically addressing is that we need to pay a lot of attention to those areas that support the flora and fauna that are being jeopardized by the rapid desertification of the Southwest. And then there's Hugh Pocock. And Hugh is dealing with the simple fact that all the water that we have in the world is the water that was here when the dinosaurs were here. And whether it's melting Arctic polar caps or whether it's the desertification and the change of climate change, the water is still maintained constantly. And so he did this wonderful project called Clouds, where he traced how water is evaporated and then precipitated. And he went up and dug up the snowmelt on the top of the Sangres while he was here in December, despite the fact that I warned him there would be no snow. he had an immense abundance of snow to dig, and he purified it. And so you can come into the Art Institute gallery and have a chance to taste what snowmelt tastes like.
Amazing.
Which is fabulous. And you have the contrast of Baltimore rain, one of the dirtiest cities, and of course all the water is purified, but it has a very different flavor. The Baltimore water...
Lead?
Well, no, because the lead is taken out, but because it's on the ocean, the water, the rainwater that falls actually tastes salty.
Yeah.
And the rainwater that falls in the Sangres actually tastes sweet. So it's quite fascinating, beautiful cloud studies, well worth a little bit of time. It's a small, focused exhibition.
So this is all at the Santa Fe Art Institute, which is on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And when you drive in the driveway, you drive all the way down to the end and take a left. And
follow it around.
And follow it around.
You
and
take, actually, when you drive in, you
buildings.
Take a right.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because they changed the place of the driveway. We're talking to Diane Karp. Now, there's a lecture this coming Monday, the 4th of February at 6 o'clock.
Yes, at the Art Institute, not at Tipton Hall. We're moving our lectures into our own space.
Nice.
Which is very comfortable, and people get to see the exhibition as well as hear the lecture. It's a lecture by Blandine Chavan, who's the director of the Art Museum in Nantes. And it's part of an ongoing relationship we have with the École des Beaux-Arts in Nantes, where we bring artists here to the Art Institute for residency, and we send artists from the U.S. over to France to teach and engage with their students there. And Blandine is talking about a wonderful kind of contested space between image and text that was a relationship between a very important writer and poet who came to teach at the University of Albuquerque back in the 70s. I didn't know there was a University of Albuquerque. It was a Catholic university that didn't last much beyond the 70s. But Michel Boutour, who was an experimental writer of great renown in France, came to teach at the University of Albuquerque. And a very dear friend of his named Camille Briand, who was a writer and an artist, began a correspondence of drawings and writings and poems that linked Nantes and Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And so she'll be talking about this marvelous relationship.
And do we get to see them?
You will be able to see some of them in the lecture, and we're hoping that next year we'll be able to bring the exhibition and exchange an exhibition of a wonderful collaboration between Susan York, the artist, and Arthur Z, the poet, to send to France, so it would be in Nantes. So this idea of exchanging culture is... Literal cultural exchange.
So this is on Monday at the Santa Fe Art Institute at 6 in the evening.
Monday the 4th of February.
Right, okay. Now, there's something else that you're doing, which I think is so fabulously awesome that you have to tell us about it, which is that you're doing some work at DeVargas Middle School, bringing art to the school, but not in the art class context, but actually in the humanities mathematics, your basic curriculum, language arts.
And what we discovered, we've been working in the public schools for almost 12 years, and what we discovered a long time ago was that when you give children the opportunity to think for themselves, to think creatively, to be innovative, not to be looking for the right answer, but to be figuring out what they want to say, it's a very different engagement. And we've been working with Chris Slakey, who's a language arts teacher in the seventh grade at DeVargas. And this year the challenge was to come in and help the kids to understand the power of language to build narrative. And so our wonderful arts outreach and education officer, Nicole Davis, and Chris Slakey sat together for weeks trying to figure out what would best serve the academic curriculum. And the decision was that they took Ernest Hemingway's one-sentence story, which is one of my favorite, and one of the things that Hemingway said was the best thing he ever wrote. And the one-sentence story is simply, "For sale, baby shoes never worn." And we took the
one-sentence short story.
Yes, we took the one-sentence story to the kids and said, you don't have to write pages. You just have to really think critically about the idea, the image, because it does project an image, a visual image, and the power of crafting language to be succinct but broad and powerful. And the kids wrote the most amazing one-sentence stories, and my very favorites run from one end of the spectrum to the other. One of them is a fabulous story that goes, "Zombies are loose in Walmart. No one knows what to do." And immediately you get the sort of crazy comedy of it. A very different one is a story that...
I love that because in the zombie movies, there's always someone who knows what to do. But in real life, that's...
Absolutely. And others, one of them is a bird cannot fly with a bullet in its side. Moving to a very profound, powerful statement about the fact that violence is part of our everyday reality. And goodness knows with all the gun violence that we're talking about now, the kids get it and they understand it.
Yeah.
This project had several aspects. Each of the kids wrote anywhere from 3 to 10 one-sentence stories. They are powerful and articulate and beautiful. And then they all got together and they voted on the ones that they liked the best. Not a prize winner, but it allowed that two of the stories could be chosen. One was part of the Cut and Paste Society's Snow Poems that
Yeah, we featured that a few
weeks
ago.
Yes, I know. That was sprayed on the school's glass windows in the cafeteria. And one of them went up at the Art Institute. And the one that's at the Art Institute says simply, "What's a wolf without her pack?" They were the two that the kids had chosen. And then they did wonderful faux encaustic abstract drawings about their one-sentence stories that sometimes fit perfectly and sometimes went in odd directions. And the final piece was they took these one-sentence stories, having worked with one of our artists-in-residence in studio at the Art Institute, and they created graphic novels. So there are three different ways that the kids had to express their ideas. The outcome, the work, is fantastic.
And one of the things that's so interesting to me about this is the kids got really excited and they showed up and attendance was, I believe you told me, 100%.
Yes.
Every day for 2 months.
We were in the school for 8 weeks and the difference in the attendance is phenomenal. The kids took great pride in what they did. They loved engaging with the ability to sort of find their own voice. And Chris Slakey said the reason he so enjoyed having arts in the class was that the kids really wanted to come to school. So the attendance was almost perfect for almost 8 weeks.
Santa Fe Art Institute, bringing kids into the schools. I mean, it's not just that you guys are going in and leading this stuff. It's that you're actually getting the kids really excited. And I think it's such an interesting model that teachers and administrators in the schools can really learn from and think about, like what gets kids excited, because once they're excited, they'll learn anything.
Well, you know,
they'll learn math and science and everything else.
Kierkegaard has a wonderful quote that has helped to drive my life, and that is, in order to teach anyone anything, first you have to seduce their minds.
Yeah.
You have to catch their interest. And this really allowed the kids to work together, collaborate, build on each other's stories. But one of the things that was most interesting is it allowed them to hear each other and to
very interesting.
And to have a deep understanding and sympathy for the ideas that they were allowed to share. When we first went into the school, the kids really didn't want to stand up and share their work. But by the third week, they were dying
to get up and share their work. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately, I don't want to get too highfalutin about it, but it is a kind of peacemaking that you're involved with.
It is very much a peacemaking. It's empowering people to not only speak openly, but to be tolerant and hear what the others have to say. And what we discovered is that a lot of the kids who, I mean, you remember being in seventh grade, it's the world of cliques and awkwardness. It allowed the kids to put that stuff aside and really value creativity and ideas and beauty.
Diane Karp is executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. They're on the web at sfai.org. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and we'll see you one of these Fridays, speaking of the arts, too.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. Thank you for always being here.
I'm delighted to welcome back to the program Cecile Lipworth. She's the managing director of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women, founded by Eve Ensler. And we're here to talk about 1 Billion Rising, which is a global campaign that is having a huge worldwide series of events on Valentine's Day. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here again.
So what's it all about?
Well, 1 Billion Rising is a global campaign that Eve sort of envisioned when we were looking to celebrate our 15th anniversary, which is coming up on February 14th. And as we sort of started discussing how we wanted to show the wonderful victories that have happened over the 14 years that V-Day's been in existence, we sort of also realized that we wanted to show how far we still have to go. And sort of instead of just having this celebratory dinner for the 15th anniversary, we really wanted to show the depth of the issue of violence against women. And at the exact same time as we started thinking about this, the worldwide statistic came out that there were 7 billion people on the planet. And when you look at the United Nations statistic that 1 in 3 women on the planet will be raped or beaten in their lifetime, we really realized that that meant 1 billion women on the planet right now will be raped or beaten. And I think it's really hard for people to conceptualize what a billion people looks like. And Eve's vision was to show the world what a billion women looked like. And so we have invited 1 billion women and the men who love them to stand up on February 14th, rise up, strike, and dance to say no more violence, to saying we're here now, this is the time we want to end violence against women and girls.
And so what that looks like is a giant worldwide dance on Valentine's Day?
Exactly. It's a worldwide global dance. We have been so fortunate when people started hearing about it, everyone offered their services and offered their ideas and brainstormed. And an amazing woman named Tina Clark out of L.A. Wrote a song, which she's given to us, called Break the Chain. And then Debbie Allen came forward and said she wanted to choreograph a flash mob dance to it. And so between Debbie and Tina, we've got a dance video. And people around the world have been practicing the flash mob and are literally taking to the streets, to stadiums, to the European Union, to Parliament, the UK Parliament, to the streets of Manila, to dance on February 14th. And here we'll be doing our own thing as well at the Roundhouse.
So here in Santa Fe, we will be at the Roundhouse, inside or outside?
So here's what we'll be doing on February 14th. We have the rotunda booked from 9 o'clock in the morning where they hold usually the press conferences that happen during the legislature. And we will have an hour where we're going to invite the community to come in and tell the legislature why they are rising. They're basically going to, anyone in the community is invited to come at 9 o'clock and give a testimony, why are you rising to end violence against women and girls? And then at 12 o'clock outside on the East Concourse and West Concourse, we think we're going to be able to take over both concourses. We're going to be doing the flash mob.
So many people?
Well, because so many people are coming and people are just excited about this opportunity to stand up together as a community and say no more violence, especially in New Mexico right now. You know, New Mexico statistics on violence are pretty much mirror the United Nations. One in three women and one in four women will experience violence and sexual abuse and rape. And so, you know, in New Mexico, when you look at the population here of 1 million women, that's 250,000 women who will be experience violence. So we're inviting as many men and as many women as would like to come up to the Roundhouse at 12 o'clock on February 14th to flash mob and dance with us and say, we're all here to stand up and say no more violence.
Explain to our listeners what a flash mob is.
Well, a flash mob is sort of a coordinated dance that everybody learns and does together. So we have a video online. There are some rehearsals happening in Santa Fe, various rehearsals. But if you can't make a rehearsal, there is a video online at 1billionrising.org that you can literally teach yourself at home. You come to the Roundhouse.
And it's not very hard.
It's not very hard at all. In fact, it's very sort of Debbie Allen, 80s moves, square feet and lifting your leg. And it's really fun. And the dance, the music is inspiring. You'll come to the Roundhouse, and as soon as we start the music, everyone will be doing the exact same moves at the exact same time. We had a fantastic video shoot last week with a group of women from Santa Fe Cares who are whose mobility is compromised. And so even if you're in a wheelchair or you're unable to stand and dance, there's some moves you can do sitting down, and they'll all be at the Roundhouse with us on February 14th.
So this is 1 billion rising. Now, meanwhile, there are things happening all over the world, and Eve Ensler is going to be in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes, exactly. As you know, you've had Eve on the show many times, and we have this extraordinary center and community called the City of Joy in Bukavu, and Eve will be with the graduating class of the City of Joy, the fourth graduating class of the City of Joy, celebrating 1 billion rising, and they're dancing and rising and doing everything else that the world is doing on that day.
Now, I think it's very important to talk about and think about the relationship between all the different parts of a campaign like this, because it's, you know, here you have a public campaign with people all over the world dancing, and it's so energizing to know that you are part of a global movement to end violence against women, which basically means ending violence,
exactly.
I mean, ending all kinds of violence. It's also important to talk about the other kind of campaigns that you have that are very practical, that have to do with, I mean, starting rape crisis centers and sex education and places like the City of Joy and real political things that are not just kind of symbolic, but they're people's daily lives.
Exactly. I think, thank you for bringing that up, Mary Charlotte. I think what we're seeing with this particular campaign is that it's allowed many, many women's groups who have been working on the issues for years and years and years to really galvanize and inspire others in the community who may never have known about the work they do, to support the work they do, but also to set a mission for what comes after February 14th, what comes after the dancing. And we're asking people to make a pledge to do one thing following February 14th that they pledge to do to end violence against women and girls. So, for example, you know, here in New Mexico, we want the legislature to pass the bills that are being put forward by the New Mexico Coalition on Domestic Violence and the Sexual Assault Coalitions, and the various bills that come forward. That's it's a concrete piece of what we want to happen. In the UK, the parliamentarians have just signed on to literally officially bring 1 Billion Rising into the language in the UK so that they can start implementing sex education in the schools. In India, with the recent issue of what happened in Delhi with the woman on the bus in Delhi, the women's movement there came together. Eve was in Delhi actually as that was all happening.
Good heavens, just by coincidence?
Total coincidence that she happened to be there. We had planned a trip for her for months, and it was that week. But the women's movement there was really moved and motivated and inspired to say, well, this is the issue. We really want to bring this to the fore now that women in India can no longer be treated as second-class citizens, and that we want our rights and we want these things like rape on buses to end. And so I think it's really galvanized and inspired people to take whatever the issue is in their local community, their city, their country, and bring it forward to the highest possible levels.
Now, meanwhile, there are campaigns all over the place in which people, men and women in seemingly every country, are making videos and radio spots instead of expressing themselves, "I am rising because." What are some of the highlights of that
for you?
Oh, my
God. This has been the most exciting piece of it. Literally just coming, you know, waking up in the morning, going to our email boxes or going to the website and seeing the thousands and thousands of videos. Peru, every member of the Peruvian parliament, from the mayor of Lima to TV stations to celebrities to activists on the ground, are standing up and have got a huge I Am Rising campaign because airing on Twitter and Facebook and on the news and in the media. In India, it's been beautiful. They're making kolams and kolams, which are the patterns they make in the sand with rice. And this is all in honor of 1 Billion Rising. In Bhutan, they'll be lighting butter lamps on February 14th all over Bhutan. The Queen Mother of Bhutan signed on to say she'll be doing this. All 7,000 islands in the Philippines have signed on to say they are going to be doing a flash mob on February 14th. An Aboriginal group in Australia have taken over a football stadium, and they'll be dancing in the stadium on February 14th. So from the minute people wake up, you know, which will really be February 13th for us on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. There'll be some kind of action going on, which is just a huge. Yesterday, Eve was in the European Union, and the members of Parliament and Eve all danced in the European Union to bring in February 14th. And they're trying to pass some really incredible legislation in the European Union towards women.
One of the things that's so important, I think, to analyze and look at is the fact that social norms change over time. In my own lifetime, which is not that short, but not that long either, I mean, I've been watching this television program called Mad Men, which was, I mean, this was the Kennedy administration. Kennedy is elected in the first season. And the depth of sexism and the normative nature of sexism in 1960 is so ridiculous looking to our eyes today that it kind of makes you think, okay, we've actually done a whole lot of work in the last 50 years. And if we've done that much work, we can do that much work again in the next 50 years.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing with this campaign is certainly that this could be a revolution for us. This could be our 60s revolution, where women are standing up and saying, you know, now that we've got all these hard-won victories of being liberated, we now want the violence to end towards us. That hasn't stopped. That's been continuous. And I think that is the big issue. You know, we really feel that violence against women is the issue of our time, because when violence against women ends, really, women will thrive merely than surviving. And when women thrive, the whole planet will change.
Well, I think there's this funny thing that happens when violence against women ends, violence against the earth also ends. I don't know exactly what the mechanism is, but that does seem to be the way it works.
Well, Mother Earth.
I know.
Earth Mother. So I think it is. You know, I think Eve has often said in some of her speeches and probably on the show, when we rape the Mother Earth, and what we do to the earth, we do to women's bodies. It's the same dishonor we have. So I agree with you. I think that when we do stop raping and violating women, we will see the connection between what we're doing to the planet as well.
We're talking to Cecile Lipworth about the campaign 1 Billion Rising, which is happening on Valentine's Day, the 14th of February. I think also it's really important to keep in mind the fact that when you end violence against women or when you fight violence against women, men don't come out the losers. It's actually a win-win situation.
Exactly. I think, you know, we've spoken about this a little bit before, but I think what the patriarchy has done to men is just as harmful as what it's been doing to women, in that men have been taught not to be sensitive, to be emotional, to not to stand up when they see other men violating women, or to not to comment on that. And I think ending all of that will really help both sexes. It's not just about one. It's not about having a hierarchy of women over men. It's about coming together and working together on the issue.
Right, and having some weird thing called loving equal relationships, which have not always been possible, and which in many places still are not possible.
Exactly.
I mean, when you look at the rhetoric of what happened in Delhi, but that's a whole other conversation that we don't have to have right now. Cecile Lipworth is the managing director of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women, founded by Eve Ensler, and 1 Billion Rising has a website, which is 1billionrising.org. And there's also a local website.
Yes, that's right. We're asking people to join our Facebook page, which is our website, and it's obrsantafe.org, and it will take you right into our Facebook page where we're posting daily any updates we have, any rehearsals we have, and the schedule for what will happen on February 14th.
Wonderful. Now, is it possible for us to hear just a little bit of that, of the song you were talking about, the 1 Billion Rising song?
We'd love it. Break the Chain by Tina Clark.
Okay, here we go. Cecile, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte, for having me.